from Relay. This is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of television. This is episode number 105, recorded October the 16th, 2025. I am your master of ceremonies, as always, Jason Snell. And I am joined once again by Will Carroll from Under the Knife. Will, welcome back to Downstream.
It's always great to be here, especially with so much happening. It's like that every time, but it just feels like a lot.
It keeps happening. That's the funny thing is like even like from day to day as we were planning this episode, it's like, oh, here's another thing. Well, here's another thing. It just keeps happening. And obviously because you have been writing about sports for so long now, and you know, we're back at Baseball Prospectus back in the day, all the way to today with your Substack. We try to talk about sportier things with this one, and the fact is there's so much going on that's interesting in the world of sports, television, and streaming right now that we never hurt for topics.
The Six Kings Slam is not even on our list of things to talk about.
I don't even know what that is.
Quick thing, this is Netflix's latest, I don't think it's even an experiment. The Saudis put together something they're calling the Six Kings Slam. They basically had to have something in an arena, so they got the top six tennis players, put $6 million.
Oh, is that what I've been seeing on social media? I see.
Yeah. So somebody's going to win $6 million.
Dave Chappelle doing a routine there at pregame.
Probably. You know, that's gone interesting. Nobody's really criticizing these guys for the politics because, hey, $6 million is $6 million. That's more than the U.S. Open.
Yeah, I think it's not without controversy, but it's a little bit different when it's tennis players versus comedians, especially comedians who complain about being transgressive and getting canceled and things like that, and then going to a oppressive regime. Anyway, that one didn't make the list, is what we're saying. That's why we led with it. And instead, I'm gonna take us to a segment I like to call Hulu Everywhere. Now, here's the story. Disney streams worldwide, and then they've got content that is not in the Disney brand that they also stream worldwide. And this started because Disney had Hotstar in India, which was a business built around, I believe, cricket rights. And what they decided to do with the material they own that in the U.S. is primarily coming from their purchase of Fox, and that stuff was on Hulu and is part of the Hulu thing, which they used to co-own but now own outright or are about to they're in the process of buying outright. And so you ended up with this very weird dichotomy where you would have things that were on Disney Plus in the rest of the world but on Hulu in the U.S. or were in this Star sub-brand tile inside Disney Plus that they built out of the Hotstar brand to have a thing that was not Disney Plus that could contain that content. Anyway, this is a long way of saying that Disney has, as of I think last week, killed the Star brand globally and replaced it with Hulu now that it owns Hulu. And that is the place where you're going to get more edgy, adult oriented, not carrying the Disney proper brand, but having it still be inside the Disney Plus app. And so that's a big step because for the entire first, looking at the number 104 episodes of this podcast, we have had to explain to people who listen to this podcast outside the United States that Hulu is a thing that exists. And now Hulu is a thing that exists everywhere because it is the unification global brand extension of Disney for the more adult material, like their stuff from Fox and FX and the like.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because I would have thought, especially with Star, it would have had more brand awareness. You know, just people understood it more.
Just because it's been there.
Here in the U.S., the opposite. So it's a question I had, but Disney knows branding better than anyone. So I assume they made the decision. I assume Hulu doesn't mean something weird in some language.
I mean, never say never. You never know what might be the case, always, but you would yeah. think not. You think they would
always
have
remember the
up.
Story about Chevy Novas. Do you remember this one?
Oh yeah. I think that's not true, but it is the Nova, the idea that it's in Spanish, in some Spanish speaking countries, it means doesn't go.
Oh, wow. If that's urban legend, then
I think it is not true, but
years old when I learned that.
It's a great story, though. I mean, there's a whole class of stories that are like, it does, I don't care if it's true. It's too good. So, yeah, they are the geniuses of marketing. I think they must have had a conversation, which was, do we want Hulu? Now that we own it, do we want to just go all in on Hulu as this other streaming brand that they can ultimately sell as a, what they're doing in the US is it's a separate subscription. There is a separate app, and there is an article in Fast Company about how it will probably fade away eventually. But right now they're happy to let it sit out there, but they really want everybody. It is in your strong financial interest to bundle Hulu and Disney Plus together. And that, and it allows them to have a separate brand to determine this content that you might not want to put. You might want to not want to put Ethan Hawke in The Lowdown, a great show, by the way, that I think I recommended last time, on Disney proper, because it's not really a Disney thing, but it is a Hulu thing and an FX thing, and it is very good. It's just not quite family friendly in the same way.
Yeah, and I it's actually surprised me a little bit how little they gatekeep with that. I don't know. I mean, I don't have kids, so I don't have any parental controls in here. There was something I tried to stream once, a live event, and couldn't do it because it was adult. But regardless, you know, I see things like, I forget the name of the Emma Stone movie that was rather adult, and it was their front page of Disney, which just seemed odd to me. As Sam Altman said, I'm not the elected moral gatekeeper of the world here, but it was just kind of odd.
This is what they have to struggle with, is that they want to be broad, but they also have a little bit of a brand to protect. And so you end up in a situation where having some other, I mean, Disney struggled with this forever, right? Because that's why they created Touchstone Pictures in the 80s, was to say this is not Disney. Even though it is Disney, it's not the Disney brand. And, you know, the challenge of naming your whole thing Disney Plus and having this inside it, is it still inside Disney? I know when they rolled out Hulu inside the Disney Plus app, one of the things that they had to do is, actually it even predates that, because I think it was when they put on Hamilton, that they you had to start building in some parental controls into the app, right? Like you have to do that, so that if a kid is watching, they're not going to see the Hulu stuff, and they're not going to see stuff above a certain age rating. But they've done that. But I think what we've also learned is in the streaming era, a lot of these rules feel malleable, right? They feel flexible, because this is we're going to get to Eddie Q talking about Apple with Matt Bellany on The Town in a minute. But one of the things that I didn't have in our list of things to talk about that is him laughing at this perception when they were launching Apple TV Plus, that they wouldn't do anything that wasn't squeaky clean because it was Apple. And I'm reminded that in the first 10 seconds of the first flagship show of Apple TV Plus, which was season one, episode one of The Morning Show, there is not just an F-bomb, but I believe it's an MF-bomb. And I'm like, okay, we're clear about this. It's not NBC that we're watching here. And Disney is the same thing, right? They want to protect, they want to have a little safe Disney harbor for kids stuff, but they also, they do want to have the flexibility to go beyond that. And Hulu kind of gives them that.
The other thing that's going on, and I don't fully understand this is much more in your world, is there's a couple states that are requiring app stores to do age verifications.
Right.
And they've blocked all sorts of things where I live in Indiana without age verification, without any way of doing it. And Indiana doesn't have digital IDs yet, so it makes it even tougher. I wonder if eventually Disney and Apple and everybody else are going to have to put some sort of, age gate. I know they've got cameras he looks under 18.
Yeah, it looks like, there are other podcasts for this, but the short version of it is that what Apple is definitely working on, and I think that everybody is going to have to do, is some sort of regime where you're basically, what Apple's trying to do is say, when a parent sets up a kid's device, they say how old the kid is. And so there's the problem with having you submit your ID is, if you're submitting your ID to like a random website and then there's a data breach, your ID is gone. And that's really bad. So the idea is, if you can put it on parents especially, then it's up to the parent to verify their child's age, and then that rides with them. And then when an app like Disney Plus asks the OS from Apple, let's say, how old is the person watching this, the system will say, we'll give them an age range. They'll say 13 to 15 or 10 to 12 or whatever. And so there's no specific birthday. There's no like disclosure of personal information that is not necessary. And the vouching for it is that the parents set up the system. So parents could lie. But again, I would argue at that point, that's like parents serving alcohol to their kids at home. It's like, if a parent wants to do stuff like that, the parent's going to do it. But the point is not that. The point is that the parent's going to say, this is my kid. My kid is 10 years old. And then you only get to see stuff appropriate to 10-year-olds.
Or 10 to 12. I just find it so fascinating how all of this kind of loop-de-loops and circles back on itself and tries to swallow its own tail.
Then you want your Disney Plus interface to be very different. When you turn on parental controls, you'll see a totally different, presumably. I should try that, but some stuff will just vanish. You would think it would not all still be in the interface, but unplayable. You would think that it would kind of go away and be.
Yeah.
No, kids don't get to see that. But anyway, so Hulu is the brand. Welcome everyone else to the world of Hulu that we've had in America for so long. You get to be part of this vaguely Hawaiian word that means streaming that Jason Kalar brought to all of us ages ago when it was a totally different concept for a streaming service. It was where all the TV networks put their stuff because they didn't have their own streaming services. Now it's Disney's outlet for content for the most part, plus a little bit of Fox stuff that's still on the separate News Corporation owned parts of Fox. Those are still in there too. So, but it's mostly Disney. Anyway, Hulu is now everywhere. So a milestone. This episode of Downstream is brought to you by Claude from Anthropic. Claude is a next-generation AI assistant built by Anthropic and trained to be safe, accurate, and secure to help you do your best work. I used Claude to tweak some of my weather page templates, and that's some PHP code that I don't know that well. It was able to solve a really quick problem for me and say, like, I'd like to change this to do this other thing. And it gave me some code to paste in, and it worked, and I didn't have to think about it any more than that. It was really nice. Similarly, editing some Python scripts, doing some CSS, just little tasks where I could look it up and then modify the code that's on a website that says, here's how you do this. But instead, Claude has already thought of all of that, and then it just sort of puts it together. Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's a collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, not for you. Whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. It doesn't just give you answers. It helps you think through the problem. Sometimes, I say, the act of constructing a prompt for an LLM helps you frame your problem in a way you didn't think about it. It's actual good cognitive work. Claude's internal and external research capabilities go way deeper than basic web search. Think comprehensive, reliable analysis with proper citations. For clients, you can turn hours of research into minutes. You can have context from your calendar, emails, and all your go-to tools, like having a central brain for all your work. No more digging through multiple tools and documents. If you're ready to tackle bigger problems, sign up for Claude today and get 50% off Claude Pro when you go to claude.ai/downstream. That's claude.ai/downstream for 50% off your first 3 months of Claude Pro. That includes access to all the features mentioned in this episode. That's all lowercase letters, claude.ai/downstream. Thank you, Claude, for supporting Downstream. Next topic is, as promised, Apple. The big news, and by big, I mean it's not big at all, but it is interesting, which is Apple TV Plus, a service frequently called Apple TV, sometimes called Apple Plus, is now officially called Apple TV. The Plus has been removed. People in my world are making a lot of this because anything Apple does that will get overthought. But I do feel like, and Eddie Q said as much on The Town with Matt Bellany, that everybody called it that. Even at Apple, they called it Apple TV. They named it to be parallel with iCloud Plus and News Plus and Fitness Plus, which are all paid services. But they're
Think about News Plus as Plus?
News Plus. Yeah, you get a bunch of stuff in News Plus that you don't get in News. That's like gated. So like the wall.
Oh yeah, but I'm just saying, if you think of it that way, I mean, because
honestly, it's in Apple News, but you can only see that stuff if you've got News Plus, and you know, it's like
or the. What's the big subscription I have? Apple One.
Apple One, which is not a plus. Yeah, no, it's plus. Just a one. I mean, it started at zero and then they added one, so it's plus one, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, it's dumb, but the point is, look, everybody called it out. What I come back to is everybody called it Apple TV, so just call it Apple TV. You can't call it Apple Plus. That's not a name. But you can call it Apple TV, and people will be like, but wait, don't they have a box called the Apple TV? And it's like, well, you know, they do. It's called the Apple TV 4K. But at the same time, like, I think you understand it all by context. There's a TV app. There's a TV streaming service. I think it's just not that big a deal, and it simplifies it a little bit. The fact that they didn't put out a press release, they literally just had it in another press release, suggests to me that Apple also doesn't think it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And that everybody else is making more of it than...
I'm going to overthink this a little here. Okay. We all know there's a new Apple TV, the box, coming.
Yes.
Is it going to be Apple TV? Could they call it Apple Home? Could they call it Apple a million other things?
I wrote a blog post this week that said maybe they should just call it HomePod TV and rebrand their entire home line as HomePod. And I had people say, but pod means audio. I'm like, well, no, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Pod has been used in audio context by Apple. But when Steve Jobs picked iPod as the name of the iPod, it fundamentally was a name that doesn't mean anything. And that's the whole point. So you could call HomePod your line of HomePod products if you wanted. You could call it, you know, Home TV or something. But I think HomePod TV is not bad. HomePod Video, whatever. I don't think they need to do anything, quite honestly. But they could. They could rebrand because they claim that they're going to be doing more home products down the road. Today, Apple and NBC Universal announced that there will be an Apple TV Peacock bundle. So that's new. Everybody is bundling with everybody else.
Everybody's bundling with
bundles
for the ESPN, Fox.
Yeah.
How do they split these up? I don't even know.
I think everybody likes bundles because bundles reduce churn and nobody likes churn. So that you're less likely to drop if you've got two services in a bundle, because now the two services, only one of them really has to please you. You save a little bit of money. It's as they say in their release, customers in the U.S. can save over 30% by subscribing to the Apple TV and Peacock Premium Bundle for $14.99 a month, or Apple TV and Peacock Premium Plus, my favorite name for a streaming service, by the way, Peacock Premium Plus, for $19.99 per month. And, you know, I get Peacock. I'm an Apple One subscriber. So I think when my Peacock subscription lapses, I can actually switch to this bundle and save a little bit of money on Peacock. But yeah, and then there's Disney's got a bundle with HBO Max, and like all the bundles are kind of coming back, and because it reduces churn, like it's worth it for them to give you a little bit of a deal if you agree to buy both of something.
But at what point do we unbalkanize this? We talked about this last time.
Yeah,
you know, we saw this with Venue Sports, that they said, no, you can't kind of put everybody back together. You can't put Humpty Dumpty completely back together again. But, you know, it feels like at some point, especially with sports, just to follow one team, you got to have 26 different subscriptions.
Yeah, we'll get to the NBA in a little bit, but it's absolutely the case that is.
Seeing that chart you sent, crazy.
Yeah, we'll get there. Absolutely crazy. A chart made by the NBA itself, but we'll get there. Yeah, we are in a bad time in terms of complexity for sports in general, and these bundles. Yeah, there is a question, like, bundles are good and all, but then eventually you just rebuild the cable bundle, and you know, I don't know. It's an interesting thing. So Apple's got a bundle. I think it's their first bundle of this sort. It's going to be interesting to see if anybody cares or not, but it's interesting that they're playing that game. Now, Eddie Q. Got to talk about Eddie Q. It's on the town. I thought the most interesting things that he talked about were about sports, actually. I linked to this from my website, from Six Colors, but he said something that I thought was really, really interesting. And this is in the context, by the way, of reports that continue to say that Apple is going to be the U.S. rights holder for Formula One, but that hasn't been announced as of this recording, although there's a lot of speculation that it will happen sometime in the next few days while Formula One is in the United States for a race. And this would be a time to do it. Let me say...
If I can break a little sure. news.
Oh, yes.
A source has told me...
What?
A very good source has told me he does not expect it this weekend.
Interesting. Okay.
He thinks... Remember, there is another United States Grand Prix...
There is.
...in Las Vegas yeah. in a couple weeks. And he says... Doesn't think everything's coming together.
Ah.
So put it we'll off a see where weeks. That goes.
All right. So it may be imminent.
Do it in Vegas.
It may be not imminent. Everybody who knows seems to think that this is a done deal, but they haven't announced it yet. Anyway, this is what AQ said. He said, MLS, Major League Soccer, is closer to what we wanted to do, which is we'd like to own a sport end to end. That's the key phrase for me, so that we can offer customers what we do today, which is you don't have to worry about blackouts. You don't have to worry about how to watch. We can do picture in picture. We can do all these kinds of things that every sports fan wants. Taking little rights here and there across all these different sports doesn't deliver it. So that's not an area we've been interested in. I can tell you we have not been in the bidding process to take chunks of sports. Again, we'll get to the NBA in a little bit, but this is what I keep harping on about Apple. Now, they do have their Friday Night Baseball, Major League Baseball thing, but he referred to that as basically a way for them to learn. He said it's basically, he didn't want to say it this way, but I'll phrase it this way. Those rights were cheap and they let them explore what it's like to work with a league as a rights holder and to see where do they get to push production and where is it hard to push production. And I think that that's why if they continue to do Friday Night Baseball, it will be things like that. It'll be, let's try stuff. But like, it's a little teeny tiny shard of baseball rights. MLS, though, what he says here is closer to what we wanted to do. So in the context of Formula One, there's this question of like, ESPN just shows the races. And then there's Formula One TV, F1 TV, which is a subscription product that Formula One sells around the world, but especially in the United States, that is like a super upgraded version of that that's separate from the ESPN rights. And the question is like, what is Apple going to buy? And I keep thinking it doesn't make sense for Apple TV, a streaming service, to just get the race on video like ESPN. Mm-hmm. F1 TV's existence to me doesn't make sense at all. If they're going to pay $140 million a year or whatever for F1 rights, they're going to want it all. As Eddie Q says, we'd like to own a sport end to end. So my theory is that Apple wants to, and Apple and Formula One, my theory is, this is like testing out their relationship. What if we have one of the world's foremost technology companies with our rights in the United States, and we're going to work with them to probably use some of the F1 TV product in terms of data and maybe even the software to build a streaming only product for Formula One that people can subscribe to. And then maybe you can also, you know, if you're a TV Plus or Apple TV subscriber now, yeah. I guess I should say you get some of it for free. And my feeling is the reason they do this is because Apple gets it end to end in the United States. Apple and F1 get to further explore their relationship, which obviously they did F1 the movie together. Further explore that. And like, if I take Eddie Q at his word, and he seems to be a pretty straight shooter, I think this is about both sides sizing up how it's going, because as other international F1 regions come up for bid, Apple could just start buying them out. Now, buying all of F1 rights for the world would cost probably $1.2 billion a year, which is a lot, although Apple spends more than you think on even on MLS in a year. But like, they don't have to do it everywhere to start. They could just pick up the US, try it in the US, and then it would be very easy if Australia comes up for bid next year to add it. And if, you know, and just sort of like start adding territories and expanding the relationship if it works out well for F1 and Apple. So that's my guess. What do you think about where this is going?
The thing that occurs to me, and I feel a little bit like Charlie.gif, you know, with the murder board and the conspiracy theories.
That's right. I got the red yarn.
But the thing that I come back to, and this was late with the Peacock deal, Now, you talk about the ESPN feed. What ESPN broadcast is just flat out the Sky Sports central feed.
Yeah, right down now, to them saying, press the red button on your Sky remote, which doesn't exist in the U.S.
Which doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Aha. But what if Apple suddenly becomes? Because Sky over there has, you know, their own remotes, their own TV line. They've done, what is it, Sky Glass, Sky Box. You can watch over there all 20 in-car feeds. You can choose which to watch. You can go back the same way that you can with Peacock and the soccer games and say, I just want to watch the, I got here half an hour late because I didn't get up at 8 for an Arsenal game. So it'll show you the highlights or it'll give you a little quick catch up. It's the same sort of thing with that. I think what they're going to do is figure out a way inside the Apple TV app or on the box on the, if you have the service,
whatever.
That they will basically become the Sky Glass red button, that you'll be able to have all those feeds, which will make F1 TV functionally irrelevant.
Right.
Other than, yeah, it does a couple other things. But I think you're exactly right. The thing that I keep coming back to is that they just did this deal with Peacock, and Peacock is owned by NBC Universal, mm-hmm. and NBC Universal owns Sky.
Well, yeah. So I'm not an F1 fan, but it's an interesting idea. The idea that there may be more complexity here, right? Like, it may be that Apple is also talking to Sky about throwing them some money to turn the Sky broadcast into more of an international English mm-hmm. language broadcast.
Or which is exactly what it is.
Alternately, because there's also like F1's English language broadcast, which is not the same as the Sky broadcast. Or alternately, Apple may just have decided, well, they want to pick up, you know, they're going to hire their own announcers and they're going to build their own thing. And they
have hired at least two.
Oh, look at that. You're breaking more news here. Yeah. So that, cause I can't believe that Apple would never let somebody say, press the red button on your Sky remote, go across their service. It's never going to happen. ESPN didn't care. They just didn't care. But Apple's never,
they were paying nothing. It was 4 hours of content.
Yeah. They're never going to allow that. So the question is more like and this is maybe goes to the complexity of this deal, but like, how does Apple want to build this out? And again, I keep coming back to the fact that Apple wants to think about, and I'm sure F1 does too, but this is a two-way street. What is this relationship? Where can it take them? And what's the right platform for F1's product on Apple's service? And like, I get the complexity of it. I've heard from people who say they love the Sky announcers because they love how they're perfectly not biased or perfectly biased for UK drivers. And I've heard from people who say they hate the Sky announcers because they're so biased. And like, that's fandom. I mean, Apple on Friday Night Baseball lets you listen to their announcers or the home or away radio. Like, I think Apple gets that aspect of it. And I would be shocked if in the long run you couldn't choose alternate audio feeds, but they're going to also have their own announcers and their own cameras and be able to cover events year-round like that.
I'll go a little deep here. One of the things people have noticed this year about F1 coverage is that for, I don't know how long, a long time, David Croft, everybody just calls him Crofty, and Martin Brundle, former driver, haven't been on as much. And so the question was, you know, what were they doing with Jensen Button and Monica? What were they doing with Tarun Kandok, what were they? I forget the name of the guy who has stepped in for Crofty a couple times. But was it a tryout? Were these guys realizing, hey, maybe this gig is not as good as I thought, and I got to look elsewhere, Ian Dark style?
Yeah, I mean, it's a look. If we talk about ESPN literally not caring enough to pay to write a check to stick something on their air, a lot of it at bad times of day in the U.S. And just use the Sky feed. The idea that Apple, one of the world's largest companies, would come in with a check that is 50% more to F1 and is going to build out a production team and a broadcast team. Anybody else in the business of making content for F1 has to be so excited, because you're going from a completely disengaged media partner in the US to a deeply engaged media partner. And if you're working for F1 on their international feed, or you're working for Sky, doesn't matter, right? Like, Apple rolls in, you are going to pay attention, because it means they're going to try to hire people. And even if Sky wants to keep you, Sky may need to counter. They may need to give you a raise. Like, that, it's good for those people who work in that business. That's really interesting, right? Because it is going from an unengaged media partner in the US to an engaged one. It's a huge difference.
The other thing to remember here is that for, I guess it's been a decade now, the company that owns the media rights for F1 is Liberty.
Liberty.
John Malone's company.
Yes.
And it's
not
run
the
by,
emu.
Yeah.
It's John Malone who owns the Braves.
And
Liberty
also chairman of Warner Brothers Discovery.
And is the chairman of WBD and a big Zaslav supporter to bring the whole downstream connected universe
together. Another piece
together.
Of yarn for us. So, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. You would think that Liberty... I'm curious, you know, how is Apple in Austin makes sense. Apple in Miami, a little less sense. Apple in Vegas, nothing makes sense in Vegas.
But I'll tell you this, Eddie Q in Miami makes a lot of sense to me.
That's true. That's true.
So, and this is, I don't know. It's, I, when people have talked to me in my role as an Apple commentator about Apple's sports ambitions, and when we've talked about it on this podcast, I keep coming back to the fact that Apple's, the MLS deal, other than the fact that it's small potatoes, which is actually why they did it, just like why they did the one night of Major League Baseball. It's a trial. But the other than the MLS being a small potatoes league, sorry, MLS fans, but like in the grand scheme of sports leagues, it's containable and understandable and not one of the, you know, top five sports leagues in the world, right? By any means. But other than that, it's exactly what Apple wants to do. Why? As Eddie said, they own it end to end. And in the case of MLS, they own it worldwide. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. They own worldwide rights. They own 100% of the media rights for MLS. That is the platonic ideal for Apple. F1 is not the platonic ideal. But when I look at it, I think, this is how, if Apple's not going to roll in and just write a check to show all NBA games or all NFL games, even if they could, even if those rights were available, it's never going to happen. But I see a path to Apple in 10 years having all of F1 worldwide. And I know their fans out there, especially in Europe, are like, no, that'll never happen. It's like, if Apple writes a check for $1.5 billion every year for worldwide rights to F1. And that I feel like we're a long way from that. Everybody needs to see how this goes, but this would be step one. And that's why I think it's so interesting.
There's another interesting point here. We've talked a lot about experimentation. Obviously, I agree. That's exactly what Apple's doing here. I think that's what they were doing with baseball. We've seen them dabble. Same thing with Netflix. Netflix has dabbled. Peacock with soccer, they already had the rights, so it just kind of transferred over. Yeah. And honestly, they've made it better.
They have.
It's one of those things where I think when you look at these dabblings, the one thing I notice is nobody's changed much. An Apple baseball game looked like a baseball game. I mean, they put a couple iPhones up there, and all that did was look.
And they got a drone.
Notice that.
Q said something about this that I thought was interesting, because I've noticed that in the last couple of years, I have gotten invited to a press conference call to kick off the Apple Sports Major League Baseball, Friday Night Baseball, or MLS, one of the two. And so we get the guy who's Apple's like guy in New York who's in charge of their sports partnerships. And every year I'm waiting for them to say everything's in 4K HDR now. And they never do. Part of that is about technical infrastructure and the trucks and the cameras and all and the wiring in the stadiums and all of that. But what has stopped me is that Friday Night Baseball looks better than other baseball broadcasts. And I thought, why is that? And Eddie Q mentioned it on The Town. He said, we don't get to control everything about that. This is one of their things they learned, is that they can't just roll in and declare that all baseball stadiums will have 4K HDR. I mean, they could write a check, but it's just not going to happen, right? But he said, so what we did is we don't compress the video as much as everybody else does. It's like, it's not 4K, but it's so much less compressed that it still looks good and that the colors look good. And they've made little adjustments within that framework. And I think that's really interesting, but that's also a good lesson for them to learn, is you're tinkering around the edges, because unless you own it end to end, you can't do more than that. And you need to own it end to end and not dabble like Netflix. You have to have a partner who also believes in it. And MLS and Apple are truly partners in producing that product. And I think that's what they're hoping. Maybe like it all warmed up with the F1 movie, and now it's coming to this, which is like a next stage of, let's see what we could do together. We'll use the US, which is, even with the growth due to Drive to Survive on Netflix, the US is not a strong market for F1. It's better than it's ever been, but it's not a strong market for F1. And I think there's some signs that some of the ratings have actually regressed the last couple of years on ESPN. So like, there's a real opportunity for Apple here and for F1 here, and also for them to experiment in a market that's not going to be catastrophic if it doesn't work right.
Yeah. And yeah, F1 has been goofy. You know, putting the Las Vegas race at, what was it, 2 a.m? Was not ideal for American viewership.
No.
But
They didn't care because
they were doing.
Yeah.
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 We're going to build a building in the middle of the Bellagio fountains. That'll be awesome.
Mm.
No, not awesome. Now everybody can't see the fountains.
But, and then having a partner, and a partner like Apple, to talk about like what Apple's interested in, but because remember, Apple is not going to be able to show this anywhere else. It'll just be in the US. So that's what they're going to be focused on. Although I'm sure they're going to have interesting time delays, and everybody's going to get an iPhone notification at 3 a.m. saying that the race is starting and all of those things too. This episode of Downstream is brought to you by Factor. Fall always feels like a bit of a reset. Everybody's getting back into different routines. If you've got kids, they're going back to school. Everything changes. The days are getting shorter. It can be tough to adjust and find time to cook. Factor makes it easy. They have chef-prepped, dietitian-approved meals that make it easy to stay on track and enjoy something comforting and delicious no matter how hectic the season gets. With Factor, you can enjoy more variety and more meals. You can choose from a wider selection of weekly meal options, including premium seafood choices like salmon and shrimp at no extra cost, and support your wellness goals too. They've got GLP-1 friendly meals. They've got new Mediterranean diet options packed with protein and good for you fats. You can savor global favors. For the first time, they've got Asian-inspired meals with bold flavors influenced by China, Thailand, and more. From more choices to better nutrition, 97% of customers say Factor helped them live a healthier life. You'll feel the difference no matter your routine. I really like the Factor meals. My wife likes them so much she steals them from me, so I can't have them. And most importantly, I've said this before, I'm going to say it again. We were worried that my mom wasn't cooking for herself, and she was losing weight, and she was not eating right. And we get her Factor meals now. That's what we do, is we set them up. In fact, I schedule them for her. I talk to her about her likes and her dislikes, and then I use Factor's website to send her some of that salmon and some chicken, and she gets those meals, and we feel a lot better that she's got food, because she doesn't want to cook for one. She's living alone. She don't want to cook for one, and Factor gives her really good quality meals delivered right to her door. Eat smart at factormeals.com/downstream50off and use code downstream50off to get 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for a year. You heard me right. Free breakfast for a year. Code downstream50off at factormeals.com to get 50% off plus free breakfast for 1 year. Get delicious, ready-to-eat meals delivered with Factor. Offer only valid for new Factor customers with code and qualifying auto-renewing subscription purchase. Thank you, Factor, for supporting Downstream. Okay. Let's turn the page a moment. Just it's another Apple thing, but I wanted to make this kind of a separate segment, just because it is something that you and I have been talking about since our first conversation on this podcast about the Infinite Stadium, which is Apple finally announced. It's like a couple years later than I think anybody expected that there is going to be a live immersive game of a sport on the Vision Pro, and it's going to be the Lakers on Spectrum Sportsnet, which is weird, but you know, rights holders, obviously Spectrum and Charter were really amenable to the idea that they, as the rights holder, would work with Apple to create this kind of like opportunity to do some immersive Lakers games. I assume these will all be Lakers home games. They'll have a, they'll build an immersive setup at the Lakers arena, and that this is how they'll do it. And then it will be available in market live on Spectrum Sportsnet or on the NBA app for people in that market. Everyone else, I guess, won't get to see it. There'll be a replay available on the NBA app, I guess, but they won't necessarily be able to see it live. But we're at the very least going to see, one, what is it like to have a complete live or live-ish sporting event streamed into a headset like this. I know that there have been experiments on the Meta Quest as well, but I think this is going to be different. It's using the Blackmagic Ursa camera system with a live aspect that hasn't been seen before. And then, so that will be interesting to see, like, how does it work? What does it look like? And does it work? Because, I mean, I'm sure they've been experimenting with it, but we can only speculate. So, and also, I'm since you were talking about the Infinite Stadium, I want to know what you think here, but I'll throw in one last thing before I shut up, which is, I think this is the exact right sport to do it with. This, yep. Of all the sports, to say, we're going to put you somewhere in a stadium and you're just going to sit there and watch a thing, what would you choose? And I'm not the world's biggest basketball fan at all, but like, as a fan of other sports, I still think sitting courtside at an NBA game is the perfect test for this.
It is an utter game changer, because there's a couple things about being courtside. Look, I've had good seats to games. I'm a baseball guy, but basketball, I covered it when I was at FanDuel. I would sit in the press box. I would sit basically far courtside, not directly courtside. But a friend of mine, Ralph Reif, has courtside seats and, you know, takes clients out. And I was lucky enough to be one of those. And when you sit right there in those Eddie Q style seats, it's a different experience. I can go to a game and have decent seats and have a good time. But when you're down there, you're seeing them, you're feeling them, sometimes literally when they're jumping or the ball comes at you, they're 2 feet away from you. These guys are monstrously tall. Yeah. I think we got a good sense of that in the All-Star immersive that they did.
Yeah, they did the little All-Star Weekend immersive from last
year. Which was interesting for me, because it happened to be the year it was in Indianapolis. So I knew all those places. So I was like, okay, I know exactly how this feels, and that's how this feels. And you do. You see Jokic, and he's 7 foot something. Yeah. And you see Wembanyama.
These are huge. So first off, they're huge, they're fast, and they're right in front of you.
And they jump so much higher than you think they do.
And the court is so constrained that they're never that far away from you, as opposed to baseball, football, soccer, where it's an enormous, if you're sitting fixed. And I had college football season tickets for most of my life. And like, you know, sometimes it is right in front of you and it's amazing. And other times it is down at the other end of the stadium. And did he gain 1 yard or 8 yards? I can't tell. But the NBA,
you end up watching it. You end up watching the screen in the NFL.
Exactly. So the basketball is different. I went early this year, actually. My wife and I went to a couple of women's basketball games at Cal, Haas Pavilion. And it being Cal and it being women's basketball, it was very affordable. So affordable, in fact, that for not a lot of money, we sat in the first row. Now, we weren't courtside, because the way it works there is the floor is down. So I was literally right behind the Florida State social media person who was at the end of the scorer's table. But that also means I was right behind the bench. We were literally at the water cooler where they would get the drinks for the players. And it's amazing, because it's three-dimensional in a way that basketball on TV can't be. And because even at that distance where we're behind the scorer's table by a few feet, the size and movement and athleticism of those players is so much clearer, and it's just different. And so I don't know how this is going to go. I don't know. I think they suggested that there will be multiple vantage points. It's unclear whether they will be switched between, or whether you will choose to switch between them. But like, I don't know how it's going to go, but I'm so excited to find out, because I feel like this is potentially the first killer app of Vision Pro content. Like, literally, yeah. If you told the Lakers fan, next season, you can just buy a Vision Pro and sit courtside with your Spectrum Sportsnet pass, they will sell headsets because it would be amazing to do that, I think.
Yes. Here's my theory on this, and I've talked to some NBA people who didn't know. They had no idea. They're like, we don't know what the Lakers are doing. And this is all Lakers because of the ownership, the rights. Oh, remember, Charter is mostly owned by John Malone. He just figured he owns everything.
It's everywhere.
So what their theory was is they wouldn't do it directly courtside because of exactly what you just described. The experience is great. But one of the things you didn't mention is you can hear the players talk.
Ah, yes.
It might not make that age gate. Yeah. In fact, I will guarantee you it will not. Sometimes I'm shocked by some of the things they say, especially in the NBA. There are words they use that me, a white man, will never use.
Yeah, the Florida State women's basketball team was much more polite. I'll just say that.
Yeah. In the NBA, they are not.
Yeah.
But we could hear some epic trash talking, which I would pay extra for.
Right.
But the theory that one had, and this is an announcer that's been in the NBA, he thought they would put the camera basically over or side by side with the high court, full court view. So it would turn minimally, kind of like the soccer view. And then have at least one, probably both, have one of those cameras mounted over the goal. So they would be able to switch and do highlights, dunks, long three pointers, fouls, things like that. But he didn't think. Yeah, I don't know how many of these Blackmagic cameras are out there now.
I don't know.
I'm sure you can rent them, but
they're out there, but they're not very many of them.
Yeah, so he didn't think there'd be five, six, thing. And I'm hoping they've learned from those highlight videos that they've done that switching, as you would with a regular TV, that's disconcerting because you lose the immersion.
Right. Well, it'd be interesting to see how they do it. And I mean, that's one of the reasons I want them to try this and I want to see it is that I think everybody will learn. I mean, I'm sure they've been learning in secret, but I think they'll learn in real life how people react to this stuff. And it's a grammar that is being built. And like, what is the best way to do immersive basketball? And
I'm really curious if they've been experimenting with something like a Sparks game.
I don't know.
Did they do anything at Summer League? I would have thought we'd have at least heard something or somebody go, what is that weird looking goggle-eyed camera?
See the weird camera, right?
But I'll be very curious. And what's the over-under here on how long it takes somebody on Reddit to crack how to watch a game, even if you aren't in LA?
At the very least, if you've got a Spectrum Sportsnet login from your cousin in LA and you use a VPN or Tailscale or something like that to claim to be in the LA market, you might be able to do it. But the good thing is I believe they're going to post after the game is over. These will go on the NBA app to be watched as a archival game. And I don't know if you need to be a subscriber to NBA.com or something for that or not, but those should not be region locked. It sounds now. Yeah. Suffice it to say, I talked to some people at Apple about this and I said, how's the press going to be able to look at this? And the answer was, these are the questions we're asking. So, right, like everybody wants to know because this is like Apple would probably like to give me a coupon to let me watch this, but I'm not in the market and I'm not a Spectrum Sportsnet subscriber. And so like what happens then? I guess we'll find out, but they said this is coming toward the end of this year, the beginning of next year. So it's coming. That's exciting. And the fact that they can stream it live, they said it's going to go up to 150 kilobits or megabits per second, which is a very fast stream. Up to suggests that if you're watching at a lower internet quality, you will still get something out of it. But my guess is you're going to want a fast internet connection to get a real immersive experience here. The idea that you could stream immersive live is itself quite a challenge. So that'll also be something to watch is like, how good is the stream?
I'm curious if I hadn't heard that number. It's not, I mean, you can get that. I'm sure I have Xfinity.
I've got a gigabit and so it's 15% of my theoretical maximum, but they did say up to, so presumably that's the high stream, which is a very large stream, but that they will scale it back. It just may not look as good then, which is the point.
The thing to remember here is, well, first, Spectrum controls the rights and they're a cable company, so I'm sure they'd be happy to sell you a fast enough internet connection. That's an easy commercial. The second here is, what else Sportsnet has? They've got the Lakers, they've got the Sparks, they've got, do they have the Kings? I don't think they have the Kings.
I don't know.
They have one of the soccer teams, and I can't remember which. I think it's the Galaxy, but they have the Dodgers.
That's true.
Was what the whole service was. So is the next thing we're going to see Dodgers games?
I hope so. I was surprised that they didn't do this on MLS or do it on Friday Night Baseball, although it's possible that they've experimented with that. But the idea that their first experience with this is going to be with a local broadcaster. It's interesting. We'll see. We'll see. Okay. One more topic, I think, before we do our TV picks and get out of here, and that is the much promoted up to now NBA everywhere. It's the NBA on everything. There was a Twitter post, an X post by the NBA with the 2025-26 NBA season watch guide. This literally came from the NBA as a helpful thing for its fans. I'll link to it, but I'm going to read what it says because this is the world we live in right now. Sunday, ABC, NBC, Peacock. Monday, Peacock. Tuesday, NBC, Peacock. Wednesday, ESPN. Thursday, Prime. Friday, Prime and ESPN. Saturday, Prime and ABC. And then you're back around to Sunday. Again, it'll be ABC, NBC, and Peacock. Now, look, ABC is ESPN. NBC is Peacock. But still, if you're talking about where can I watch the NBA, in addition to your local regional sports network, the other places to watch the NBA are Amazon Prime and ESPN ABC and NBC and Peacock and Prime Video. They all have partnerships with the NBA. This is the new blown apart NBA rights package. And oh boy, it's a lot.
Well, there a couple of things stood out to me, and I hadn't seen this post. And looking at this, I was like overwhelmed.
Yeah.
But when you start to break it down, okay, NBC and Peacock are the same thing.
Yeah.
So that's just going to be the same thing, either linear
pretty
or stream.
Much. Yeah.
The Monday night game, nobody cares about. There's not that many of them. So Peacock gets kind of a freebie because NBC gave them so much money. And we had to pay John Tesh a little bit more money.
Mm-hmm.
What threw me is that there's none that are ABC and ESPN like they used to do with, I think, Saturday night, where they would often show them both, especially end of the year, a big game. You get Lakers Celtics or something like that. So there's none of that. What I'm curious is, okay, we know Sunday night basketball is going to be NBC. So that means ABC is going to have an afternoon game. Okay, cool. Monday, Tuesday. Tuesday will be interesting just because I couldn't tell you what's normally on NBC on Tuesday, but apparently nothing because it's going to be basketball.
Yeah.
It's the Thursday, Friday, Saturday for Prime that seems, it's right there, I'll say it. It's kind of the Prime slots. I mean, this is when most people watch. So is it a Friday night game? Where does ESPN fit in that?
Right.
Is ABC just the weekend afternoon game to kind of backfill for football? I'm curious where these are actually going to slot as to who got the best deal.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how it goes. I look forward to hearing how this works and how NBA fans handle it.
This chart should just be a picture of Yugoslavia because that's how the basketball fan is going to take it.
More Yugoslavia references on this podcast.
Exactly.
This is great. Shout out to my friend Andrzej Tomic in Slovenia. Anyway, so this is our new balkanized streaming world for sports, and we'll just have to see how it goes. But the NFL is headed this way as well. Major League Baseball, it's their dream to be this chopped up into different rights things, and we'll see what happens. And meanwhile, Apple just wants to own everything, so we'll see. We'll see. Okay, before we go, I like to do TV picks, where we tell you something that we're watching on TV that we think you would like. Will, what do you have for me?
To tie this back to F1, they have done a brand extension and released two episodes ahead. Do we call them episodes on YouTube?
Sure.
Two episodes. Yeah, let's just call them episodes. Basically, what this is Amanda DeMoldenberg, who does Chicken Shop Date which is sort of the British Hot Ones. And it's funny. She's good. So basically what she's doing is going to tracks with F1 drivers, and she does not drive. So they're teaching a person who does not know how to drive, how to drive like an F1
Amazing.
Driver, luckily in a Mercedes G. And so it's funny. It's cute. It's a nice brand extension. It humanizes the drivers a little bit more. The first two were with George Russell and Lando Norris. Yep. They're quick. They're like 10 minutes each. So I found it entertaining.
That's good. I'm also going to recommend something on YouTube this time. In the last episode, Joe and I were talking about David Letterman and his interview with Richard Ayoade, which got me into Travel Man with Richard Ayoade, which is available on YouTube. It is a travelogue where Richard Ayoade and other comedians go to cities and are there for a day or 2 days. Watch Greg from Taskmaster go with Richard to Moscow, for example, and they get weird things happen to them. And it's just fun. It's great. Yeah. This is my kind of reality TV, is this sort of like celebrity documentary travelogue thing. It's really good.
I watched the Iceland episode before I went to Iceland. I learned nothing, but I was entertained.
But it's funny. Yeah, that's it. I mean, you get funny people in interesting places like Conan O'Brien. And, you know, there are others in this genre, but it's Travel Man is good. Richard Ayoade is such a peculiar person that it's.
Yeah. I mean, and he's one of those who has not cracked the American market even a little bit.
No, that was very much the subject of his Letterman interview, was like David Letterman loves Richard Ayoade, and Richard Ayoade's like, nobody here knows who I am, Dave. so good. All right. That brings us to the end of this episode. Action packed, so much going on, but we will be back in a couple of weeks with more. If you haven't yet, consider subscribing to Downstream Plus. We haven't removed the plus from that, but it was intended ironically to begin with. This was a full-sized episode for everyone, but the only way to hear the complete version of about half of our episodes and hear ad-free episodes is to subscribe. You can go to downstream.plus to subscribe and support the show. If you've got a question or suggestion for us, downstreamfeedback.com. We love to hear from you, love to hear mothers. And you can find me at sixcolors.com, many other podcasts here at Relay, and over at theincomparable.com. Will, where can people find you?
Undertheknife.substack.com, as we wait for these playoffs to play out and see whether or not the Dodgers can do it again.
Yeah, I hope not. I'm just putting that in there. I sure hope not. A little baseball talk there. I don't want the Dodgers to win again because I'm a Giants fan. And also, I like the Mariners and the Blue Jays and even the Brewers. Anyway, that is the end. Thank you for listening to Downstream. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.